never, in those days, you didn't know sort of women in the colleges, the chaps didn't.
Yes.
I mean, the only time they ever had women around was for the commems and things, you see.
Yeah.
And then they were all sort of from London and Scotland and all the smart.
And what places. Changes in the 30s about that?
Oh, well, there was tremendous change. Have you ever read Douglas Jay's autobiography?
Yes.
Because he actually says in that he feels that it was he and us, so to speak, who brought about the change. Because, you see, I knew several members both of New College and of All Souls before I even came up in 31, because we'd been the summer before. He'd brought us over here and introduced
yes.
us to all his friends.
Yes,
mm.
yes. So it was a freer. It was much easier for women.
Yes, much easier.
By 32 or free
yes.
or something.
Yes, by that time, I mean, you know, even to sort of my contemporaries in LMH who hadn't got all the wonderful advantages I had of fellows of All Souls, they too made, you know, labour clubs and things like that. The labour club was an enormous one, it was the biggest club, I think, and it had dances and things like that.
Yes. But what rules still applied at LMH? What kind of discipline were you
oh,
under
Oh, quite
as young
a lot.
Girls?
Yes, you had to, if you had to be in by 9 o'clock, unless you put down that you would promise to be in at 11 o'clock, that sort of thing, then the doors were shut. And men weren't, in fact, I was quite glad of that too. Men weren't allowed in the college at all. I mean, one couldn't be sort of reading quietly in one's room and a knock on the door and in would walk somebody one knew. They weren't, that didn't happen.
Not allowed.
And I didn't mind it not happening. I mean, I thought it was quite a, I wouldn't, I mean, now I suppose it's quite a different world. Sort of boys and girls are there together, aren't they?
What rules seem to apply about your access to a place like All Souls? Could you simply wander in as a
oh,
woman
yes.
and sort of knock
well,
on
I don't
think
door? I don't think they quite sort of realised what was going on. There was matter of fact, I think Miss Greer, who was my headmistress, must have known a little bit about what I was doing, because I suddenly had a terrible, not fainting, but giddy attack at the end of my first term, I think. And I remember her saying, "You've always been pretty giddy, yes."
And what do you think she was implying by that?
Well, that I was sort of going to places like All Souls and New College and Balliol and that, where you know, one wasn't supposed to walk in, you see, without a female with one. Otherwise, one was in great danger from all the undergraduates.
But one walked in nonetheless. That was a rule more honored
well,
in the breach than the observance.
Yes, and I think it was. I'd actually walked at, you see, I walked into New College to see Christopher Cox, who was my great New College friend, really. And so as one was walking in to see these sort of grand, respectable people, you see, I suppose one was, one was permitted to do so. If I'd been walking in to see undergraduates, it might have been a bit different. Though
yes.
not in New College, because...
Yes.
Have you ever met any of the Lynn girls, BJ and Sheila Lynn?
No, I unfortunately didn't.
Yes, so they were a wonderful pair. And BJ actually lived, you see, in New College pretty
yes.
well, because she lived with the principal.
I've spoken to Mary Fisher.
Oh, have you? Yes. Is she still around in Oxford? Does
yes.
she still live here?
Yes.
Oh, I'd love to see her again. I haven't seen her
She's
for
in very
40 years.
Bright and cheerful state,
really?
I thought. No.
Yes. Did she marry? I forget whether she... Mm. Yes. Children and all?
That I don't know. Mm. She married in the 50s.
In her 50s or the 50s
in
of the...
In the 50s.
Mm.
I'm too discreet to ask whether they were her 50s. No,
or
I
the
don't.
Other 50s.
And were you reading PPE from the beginning?
Yes, I think I was. I think I chose it, and then somebody said that it had, I made a great mistake, that one really should, to be properly educated, one should have read history or something and got down to it. But I think it, from my point of view, it was tremendous help, because it, you know, one was writing all these essays on all sorts of subjects, so it helped with sort of journalism, which is what I went into afterwards. But listen, you're talking about me rather than Isaiah.
No, you're well, we'll get to Isaiah, but I wanted to talk about you a little. I'm just wondering about what you recall of your
meeting.
Your tutorials and lectures in PPE. I mean, what were the What were the moments of that education that you that stick out in your mind, or the people who taught you who you recall?
Well, now this is the old thing. Let me warn you. You see that in one's 80s, one forgets names. I remember the people perfectly well. Who was it who was at Balliol as my professor teacher? And I keep forgetting his name. And he then founded the college in the college in Brighton. That mean anything to
the founder of Sussex?
Anyhow, Sussex. Yeah. He founded Sussex College. But Isaiah didn't think much of him as a philosopher. He thought Collingwood was a chap. I did change to Collingwood.
Yes.
And
that's what I wanted to get to. What impression did Collingwood make on you?
Rather frightening. I mean, he was very impressive. One was impressed with him. But, I found it more frightening, but fortunately I went with a tragic and dearest friend of mine who called Jane Rendell, and he thought she was a great mind and all that, and in actual fact she totally sort of broke down after about 2 or 3 years after the university, and lived then for the next 40 or 50 years in an asylum. I mean, I never saw her again. She was a very, very admirable and clever girl.
Something like that happened to someone else called Rachel Walker.
Yes.
Did you ever know Rachel
No,
Walker?
I didn't know, but it's vaguely a name. And do you think Collingwood was through Collingwood? Do you think it was?
Maybe he caused the destruction of two bright and promising young women, not just one.
It wasn't immediate, I mean, because she was in America and one of the American universities for a short time, I think, too. I mean, it didn't happen until really the beginning of the war.
Who besides Collingwood made an impression on you?
I ought to have looked all these names up, wouldn't I? Well, Hedda Morley, was she? Yes. And who taught international relations. She was the strongest sort of female person I remember, I think. And that was because I was interested in the subject. She was tremendously sort of pro-German and the Versailles Treaty and things like that. And she was the daughter of a Foreign Office, an important Foreign Office chap, I think, or a professor or something, who was just called Hedlund. I didn't know whether Morley had arrived.
Yes. So let's talk a little bit about Isaiah.
Yes, indeed.
When did you first
meet
hear
him?
Hear
of him. I wonder whether it was when he joined All Souls. I don't think I knew him as an undergraduate, although we must have been had a year together, so to speak. He knew he was at Corpus, wasn't he? And this Jane Rendell, who was my great friend, I wonder if I heard of him, but I don't think I did. Sandy Rendell, who then became quite a professional journalist with the Times, and that Sandy Rendell was there with him. But funny enough, I've never talked to Isaiah about Sandy since those days. No, I think I only knew him when he joined the other sort of fellows of All Souls whom I knew, as it were.
Yeah. You already knew Bronwyn then?
Well, I knew the first one, you see, was Douglas Jay, who was Peggy. My closest friend at St. Paul's was Peggy Garnett, and she produced Douglas Jay, so to speak.
Yeah.
And Douglas Jay, for the term, you see, the summer before we ever came up, he brought us here to Oxford more or less every week we used to come up. And in fine weather, we went sort of, you know, for long drives to places. And in bad weather, we all sort of had lovely parties in Christopher Cox's room in New College.
Before you even actually came up to Oxford?
That was before, you see.
Yeah.
That's why I was, I was very, very lucky. I really knew Oxford quite well, especially all the glamorous chaps I knew, you see.
Yeah.
And I met Gromme, you see, before I came up. And we didn't really make great friends. I mean, he was around in this circle, so to speak. But then his mother died, And Douglas J. said, look, I think it would be nice if you wrote to him about his mother. So that was his last term. And I did write to him, and he answered, and he was so sort of pleased, you know, at having been written to, that we made immediate friends then, sort of, yes, in my first term, you see, when I came up as an undergraduate.
Right, which is autumn 31.
Autumn 31. And Isaiah, I don't really remember him in, he must have been around, no, because he was in 32, wasn't he,
yes,
also?
Yes.
I think perhaps I didn't know him till 32, because I didn't really know people in Corpus. If he'd been at New College, I might have met him. I was more sort of with the New College doctors, you might say, and All Souls, above all. And the wonderful thing about All Souls, you see, was that it wasn't the sort of college where sort of, on the whole, undergraduates went. And therefore one walked in, and as I said, I think even in the parting of ways, you know, they called me Miss Sheila, as if,
yes,
you know, rather like my grandmother's servants. It was rather nice. But they'll get right back on me.
When you go on to you, it's fine. Don't worry about that. That's fine. I'm just wondering whether you can recollect what first impressions you got of Isaiah when you met him. I mean, physically. I mean, what impression he made on you?
I don't remember sort of, you know, having more physical impression of him than of anybody else that one met. I mean, he didn't seem to me any sort of different in any way, that he looked different, which he must have in actual fact.
It's just that when I asked Mary Fisher that question, she said, absolutely like that. She said, astoundingly ugly, she said.
Oh, nonsense.
I thought that was a wonderful remark.
Really? No, that never.
Because
that
she's
never
been devoted to him all her life.
Yes, of course. Yes. No, I didn't feel that. I didn't feel he really the sort of, I mean, he was just, everybody looks different from everybody else, as it were.
But what drew you to him? What attracted you to him?
Well, his talk, really, I suppose. I mean, you know, it always bubbled out. He was always had something to say, and he was amusing and that.
Did he seem very different from all of the others? Was there something distinctive about him as a young don?
No, I don't think so, because I knew so many young dons that the distinction between them, it didn't occur to me to think what the distinction. There was some difference in an All-Souls person like who wasn't in that set was the economist. What was his name? He would seem distinctive from the others, as it were, but Isaiah seemed to.
That is to say, you're saying that they all loved music. They all had
a wide
cultural reference.
Oh no! That not at all. No, I think what attracted me immediately to him was the music, because he had this wonderful gramophone, you see, and all these wonderful gramophone records and all that. And he took me to concerts. We went to concerts together and things like that. That was lovely.
Yes.
No, the music was the one thing that he had more than anybody else that I knew in Oxford, I mean, at any rate.
Yes.
Or anywhere, indeed.
And you had music yourself, I mean, from your family or from your...
Not really, except, I mean, I'd always, like everybody was taught to play the piano, as it were. I played it very badly and soon gave it up. Oh, and there was another, I'll tell you who I also knew who was a friend of Isaiah's, wasn't he? Who was that musician who became a musical scholar? We talked about him even last night. Not, we didn't mention him.
Martin
by name.
Cooper.
Yes,
yeah.
Martin Cooper. I was very fond of Martin Cooper, yes. Martin Cooper was more immediately attractive, so to speak, as a person. I loved Martin Cooper. I can remember exactly, I've got a picture in my mind of him sort of stepping back off a curb with his hat sort of tilted back. Now, I liked Martin, but only for a very short time. I didn't really know him all his life. It was just his last term at I don't know what he was quite doing at Oxford, but I met him. He was a great friend of Granwes too. Well, he'd been at Duke College or where, I don't know. He seemed to be a sort of a free person, as it were.
When you went to see Isaiah Balsall's, can you remember his rooms at all? I mean, I see the gramophone, and I see the gramophone collection, but I mean, was it did you have an impression of kind of happy chaos, or was it very neat and tidy, or was it?
No, it certainly wasn't a happy chaos, or a lot of books, but I think against Royce, people like Isaiah knew sort of whom one should ask about and that sort of thing.
So that he would, he was someone you could consult on those kind of questions.
Yes. Oh, I was always consulting him. And I think as
personal things, or did you?
Well, I didn't like it, of course, when he criticized Granwes and things like that. I mean, I hoped some of his criticisms weren't very true.
What did he say about Granwes that you thought was just wrong at the time?
I don't think I can remember any actual thing he said. There was a sort of general slight sort of disapproval, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I don't remember him ever actually saying that Granwes is wrong.
I mean, do you think there was a tinge of jealousy? I mean, he just thought, why is this charming woman going out with this guy who, when she really ought to be more interested in me?
Oh, no, I don't think he thought that. I think he felt that I was interested in him too. I mean, I was interested in them all. I loved them all, as it were. No, I wouldn't have sort of associated jealousy with Isaiah at all, I don't think.
When do you meet Adam in 30?
Yeah, right at the very beginning, almost for 31. I met him in Balliol because we were both asked to tea by a Balliol don whose name I've forgotten, because my brother had been in Balliol, you see, right up till I think even the year before I came up, but he wasn't there when I was there. But the Grant Duff name was known, and this Balliol don had invited us both, and we both found each other. I mean, Adam and me, we found each other so very much more fun than the Balliol don, that we really just talked to each other, and I never saw the Balliol don again, whether Adam did or not, I don't know, which was very rude of me, wasn't it?
What was it about Adam that you found so enchanting immediately?
Well, he was very handsome. He was handsomer than most of the others, so to speak, you know what I mean? And he was the first German I'd ever met. I mean, you know, my father had been killed in the German war, and people like my grandmother said, you know, she'd never speak to a German again. My mother wasn't like that at all. But, and I'd never been to Germany, none of our family, we'd had nothing to do with Germany. And it was just the time, you see, with all these wonderful German films, the All Quiet on the Western Front and things like that, so that it was moving and exciting to meet somebody different from the others.
And when does Adam meet Isaiah? It's 32.
Yes, of course. Even I was going to say, but that was Rouse. He'd met Rouse, you see, before he came up. So he would have met him presumably, yes, in the I think he would have met Isaiah in 32 rather than 31. But I don't know. You could ask Isaiah then.
Yes. I think that there was this, one of the most important letters in your collection is the letter in which Isaiah says, discusses Adam's letter to the Guardian in March 34.
Was it 34?
I think it's 34, I'm ashamed to say as a biographer I am sometimes wrong. I cannot afford to be wrong in print, but I may be wrong
Yes, because he was still in Oxford in 33 years. Yeah. It must have been 34.
It's an important letter, and I... Mm. I'm just wondering whether you can recollect what impression that letter made on you. That is, Isaiah is saying to you, Adam may have very good reason to say that there is not much anti-Semitism in the court in Kassel, but essentially come off it. This is a Nazi regime, and they are, you know...
Yes.
He seems to be excusing the regime.
He certainly was, and up to a point, you see, he did that all the way through, because I don't know whether you've ever come upon that solid book of the letters between me and Isaiah. I mean, he was never, I mean, there's not a word there, really, against Hitler in the whole book, is there?
Yes, yes.
And he didn't realize how ghastly the Nazis were.
Did you ever have that out with him? Sort of, not in letter, but in private?
I don't know that I did. I mean, when we met, we didn't really quarrel. We quarreled much more in letters than we quarreled in sort of when we were together, I mean.
Yes.
Yes, I think.
So in a sense, you rather took Isaiah's side on that issue?
Oh, certainly. Yeah. Strongly, yes. Though he's writing apologizing for having sort of, you know, been perhaps too strong about this letter. Mm-hmm. And because I think Christopher Cox comes in there too, doesn't he?
Yes.
Wasn't he? Yes.
There's another element that comes into your correspondence with Adam, which is a slightly sardonic view of Isaiah sometimes, which I thought was very revealing. That is, a view which says he's so detached from European politics and so detached from the gathering crisis in Europe and so insulated inside the Oxford world that I can't quite connect to it anymore.
Is this me or Adam saying this?
Well, both of you are
both
saying
of us, yes.
I'm just wondering whether
it's
I'm
two.
Getting that right or whether I'm putting that too strongly.
I think we all felt, you see, Isaiah included, that he was sort of misjudging the situation in Germany, except, of course, for the anti-Semitism, I mean, that he got. I mean, you know, he never went to Germany again, you see. When the three of us went to Czechoslovakia and Subcarpathian Ruthenia and that, Bronwyn and I went back through Germany, but he went the route round. I think he didn't, I suppose he really didn't want to know much about Germany. I mean, it must have been painful for him to hear what was going on there. I don't think I don't think he studied it as much as, say, even somebody like, you see, Douglas Jay, who was on the Times, you see, when Hitler came to power, and he was talking very, very, he was very angry with the Times because they were already stopping their things coming through from Ebert and other people about how bad the situation was in Germany. Dawson was already then sort of trying to dampen it down all that, say it wasn't as bad as all that.
Yes. But there's a hint, I catch a hint in your own, you become steadily more involved in both the German question and the Czech question.
Mm.
And Isaiah is in some sense steadily, not less involved, but
yes.
His detachment, I think, bothers you occasionally.
Oh. No, I don't think I mean, by that time we weren't sort of so close. I mean, there aren't so many letters, I don't remember letters much between us when I was in Czechoslovakia. Were there letters? I don't think there were.
Okay.
Very few then, I think. That was sort of 36 on, as you see, when I went to Prague.
Yes.
I think the letters were diminished by then a bit.
Because it's one of the things as a biographer that I'm having most trouble, which is establishing Isaiah's relation to the political events of the 30s. I mean, astonishing as it may seem, I mean, he has opinions,
yes.
He has thoughts, Dawson comes to All Souls, for God's sake,
yes.
And he finds the Times appeasement very hard to take.
Yes.
But there's some level of emotional detachment.
Yes,
from
I think
it,
you're
which is
right.
Quite
yes.
Striking. I mean, the Jewish question apart.
Yes.
I mean, he feels very, very strongly about
yes.
that.
Though there is a letter from him to me at some point about the Germans, about. Not about, I think I ask him why they're like they are or something like that. And that was more about the sort of German reaction, as it were. It wasn't about Hitler and what was actually happening at that moment, but how they got to this position. Do you remember that or not? I don't know.
I'll have to look for it.
Yes.
Did you remember him discoursing on this subject?
Well, I think there's only one letter on that. Subject. It may be quite a late letter. I mean, it may be even sort of even post-war. Now, I think perhaps it wasn't. It wasn't.
Yeah. What do you think? The letters also. He's always had a. The letters are full of affectionate and friendly judgments of you. That is in relation to your personal life and your political life. How do you react to those judgments? Do you think he got you right, or do you think, in a kind of way, he never got you right, didn't understand?
No, I think he did. There's one letter, do you remember, about in which he said, I always cared about the flowers and the animals and the countryside, that sort of thing, rather than...
Yeah.
And I think he was right, and it was... Looking back, I realize it was rather a mistake. I mean, I've got completely immersed in all that now.
That is, you value his judgment of you. That is, you think he's someone who's understood you rather well.
I don't know. It's never occurred to me to think whether people understand me, as it were. Possibly my girlfriends I may have argued with if they didn't understand me, but I didn't remember sort of feeling misunderstood by the chaps, as it were.
Because it's an important part of Isaiah's reputation that he's regarded as having very good personal judgment. And I've always wondered,
yes.
In fact, whether his closest friends, people like you, actually agree with that, whether you think that he does have very acute judgment about you as a character, as a person, good judgment of the choices you've made in your life.
Well, yes, I think yes, he judged those fairly, fairly well. I mean, especially the wrong choices, you know. I mean, I suppose the critical ones. So I don't know. I mean, he never actually sort of protested about anything. I mean, he never actually said, "Oh, look, why on earth are you doing this or that?" He accepted, I mean, that I was in Czechoslovakia and I was sort of trying to do something to help the Czechs, I think. Though I don't know whether he realized the extent to which I was immersed in the Czech cause. And he wouldn't have liked, I'm sure, anybody like Edgar Mara, my boss in Paris. I don't think that's the sort of American he would have at all approved of. But
why not?
Well, he was too political. I mean, I don't think Isaiah was all that sort of involved in the political situation. I always felt that he was sort of up in philosophy and, you know, all the sort of more spiritual things in life than what was actually going on in this horrid world. I don't think he, you know, I never thought of him as sort of except, of course, in I suppose one did when in the wartime when he was over in America and writing these splendid letters and that, but I didn't get them. I mean, we weren't corresponding, but one knew that the and one I knew that story. by the way, which is always mistold, because in fact, you know, the story about
Irving Berlin and Isaiah.
Yes, Irving Berlin and Isaiah.
Why is it mistold?
Because I got it from I got it straight from Clementine, you see, and she that he'd been. Now, what did she say? Because what? Now, you tell me what you think the story is now, and then I'll.
The story, as I understand it, is that Clementine said to Winston.
Yes.
There's a man called Berlin who's done very good work for war bonds or something.
Yes.
And he happens to be in London, staying at the Savoy. Mm. Would it be possible for you just to meet him and shake his hand?
Yes.
And he said, "Oh, very good. I wanted to talk to Berlin for some time. Invite
yes.
him to lunch."
Yes.
This Berlin comes to lunch and is asked a lot of questions about the state of American
yes.
opinion
yes.
and when will the European war end. Mm. And this Berlin answers with increasing perplexity and embarrassment until
yes.
Winston realizes that some mistake is going on
mm.
and then finds the joke amusing and tells the cabinet, and somehow the story gets out on the grapevine very quickly. But how exactly that happens, I don't know.
Yes.
Possibly through Korda, who's staying with Irving Berlin at the Savoy at the time. But anyway, it's in Time magazine in early mm. April 1944.
Really?
Through which source, I don't know.
Yes.
Now, is that roughly right, or is it this?
Yes, oh, it is roughly right, it is. But I think that she felt about one version of the story that somehow Irving Berlin had been sort of mocked at, so to speak. Not mocked at, but
yes.
I mean, had been invited by mistake, as it were, and that he wasn't really worth inviting to lunch, whereas she specially wanted him.
Yes.
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 I think it was that, really.
She's very important to the whole story.
Yes, indeed. She
knows
is.
What's going on. It's
oh,
her
yes.
husband who doesn't know.
Yes, I know. Yeah. Yes, because he altered the table sitting. I mean, she hadn't even sat him next to Irving Berlin, you see, but because she knew he wouldn't get on with him. But he rearranged it, you see.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yes, I think he rearranged the table.
Specifically to sit closer to
yes.
the person he thought was Isaiah.
Yes.
I didn't know that either. What?
No, it was Isaiah who changed it about him, so to speak, not him about Isaiah, so to speak. I mean, it was Isaiah who wanted this splendid chap beside him, you see.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, I asked you earlier whether you thought that Isaiah was a good judge of you. I'm wondering whether, looking back at the 30s when he was a young man, you think he had good judgment about himself? Or did you occasionally sit and listen to him rattle on and think, for God's sake, Isaiah, you don't know yourself at all?
No, I don't think that ever occurred to me.
Mm.
I don't know how much I was thinking about what his self was, as it were. I mean, I accepted him without any questions, really, you see. I mean,
yes.
that. What I like. I mean, I liked him very much. I mean, we were great friends. And amusement, I mean, is what I most remember, is that he was nearly always cheerful. In a way, I felt what I ought to be asking him about was philosophy, but we didn't really talk very much about philosophy. We talked about human beings and about, you know, those around us and what was going on in Oxford. And
what you liked about him particularly was this capacity for amusement, the vitality.
I think so. It was a sort of vitality and lightness and, you know.
And the friendship takes the form of visits to his room in All Souls, walks.
Walks, yes.
In the Addison's Walk and other places.
Yes.
Visits
Lot
to
of
restaurants.
Walks. Not much. No, I don't think, now I come to think of it, that we ever went, he went to a restaurants. I mean, I was endlessly with Gronwit at the, what was it called, the famous restaurant at that time in London, in Oxford. but I don't think I ever dined out anywhere. I mean, I think it was either in his own room in All Souls or, you know, New College. Did he get to New... I don't know whether he got to New College in my day, did he? What did he come? No, I think he was still in All Souls when I...
He was in All Souls,
yes. I'm not being very helpful,
no,
I'm afraid.
No, no, you don't say that. You're being very helpful. Did you see him at all during the war? Because there's a break in the correspondence for a
yes,
long
there
time.
Is, totally, isn't it? I don't think I did, because you see, I was in the BBC, the first time I was in Oxford. I mean, I saw him, of course, with the beginning of the war. I saw him just a sort of a brief time, perhaps only one, my first term with the Toynbee and that in Balliol. I saw him then, but I think after that, I don't know that I saw him till after the war had finished.
Yes. You don't remember him looking you up during the war, because he was back.
No.
Occasionally. No,
I don't think so. I don't know whether he even knew where I was or bothered about me at all, so to be. Because we must have both been in London, because then I was in London, you see, at the BBC. But I had this lovely sort of escape place, you know, and this farm cottage that my grandmother had given me, as it were, well, lent me.
Yes, and that's where you spent a lot of time during the war.
Well, whenever I had holidays, when I wasn't sort of you know, wasn't working in London. Yes,
yeah.
I was there.
Yeah. There's an interesting letter from Isaiah in 49 when he's in America. He's lecturing in America. I think he's at Harvard. And he's just turned 40 and is rather gloomy. It's a very, very good letter. There's one passage in it when he says he's very keen to meet you in, I think it's Cherbourg in 49.
Oh yes, he's coming back. I know. I noticed that sort of now, sort of lately, so to speak. I've been forgotten, but how it all happened? Just I think I sort of, you know, I hoped. I mean, I was already married by that time, wasn't I?
Yes.
Wasn't I married to Newsom?
Yes.
So what I was doing meeting him in Cherbourg, I'm certain.
But do you
yes.
have a memory of meeting him in Cherbourg?
No, I didn't. It didn't come off.
Him.
It didn't come off. That was the thing. But why it didn't come off, I don't know. Because I think it was I who suggested it rather than him.
Yeah.
When he was enthusiastic for the meeting, and for some reason the meeting didn't come off, I didn't go to Cherbourg and I didn't meet him.
And you didn't meet him at all in that
period? Was that during the war? No, that was... Oh, that was 49, yes.
But you didn't meet him. You have no recollection of meeting him.
Well, certainly not in Cherbourg, but we met in... We met in Oxford. At what stage was it? It was just before he was meeting his present wife.
Ellie.
Yes.
When did you become aware that he was becoming attached to her?
I don't think, actually, I don't think I became aware at all. I think I only knew sort of, I mean, I was rather busy sort of with my marital relations, so to speak, at the same time, too. And I think I didn't think about his. Or did he talk about it? I remember him talking about it, but that may have been after he married, about, you know, the husband's, sort of, so to speak. No, I can't, I mean, I'm sure it's in the letters much more accurately than because I think it is mentioned, isn't it, or not? No, perhaps it doesn't. No, it wasn't. In fact,
not very much,
yes.
That's why I'm asking it.
Yes.
Story of how Jennifer Hart got to be called Thingamajig.
Oh yes, Oh, yes, I do remember that story. That was nice. We all loved Herbert Hart, of course. I mean, admired him tremendously. And he was ill and in hospital. And
what period is this?
Oh, it's... It must have been in the 30s still, I think.
Yeah.
I think it was before the war. I think
yeah.
it was quite early on. And I simply went to you know, sort of kind visit, as it were. There was any purpose of that. And just in talking, I mean, about various people, I mean, just as I sort of forget names now of people, I've forgotten of her, and I called her Thingamajig to him, you see, I said, and how is oh yes, Thingamajig, you know. And of course he repeated it to her immediately,
yeah.
You see, and she was very indignant.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
But
I never got on very well, even, in fact, I've got on better with her, so to speak, in the last year or two than we did at
yeah.
thing, because I always remember my first meeting with her was when she said, in a loud voice, there's that awful girl with the red coat and the green skirt, or the green, something like that, in a loud voice, and I looked around, and of course I was the only person who was wearing these things. And she was at Somerville. She was quite a friend of Peggy Jay's. But not of mine, ever. Really.
You didn't get on with her? Why?
Not really.
Why not?
Oh, she was pretty bossy, you know. She's probably still is, really, isn't she? I always thought of her as a sort of, you know, making her own way in life, not bothering very much about other people.
What about the spies business and the communism business? There's a very interesting letter about from Isaiah to you in 56, talking about his shock at discovering that Guy had been a spy and things.
Oh, is there? I've forgotten
yes.
that, yes.
I'm just wondering about your own sense of surprise about...
No, I knew it, actually. I remember Gronwy telling me this story, that Isaiah had told him that Burgess had told him that he was a spy and had asked Gronwy to join him, so to speak.
Yeah.
And Gronwy said he had refused. And I said, oh, well, for heaven's sake, do. And I've always assumed he did. I don't think Gronwy was a spy, but I'm rather trembling about this book coming out now by his daughter.
Yes.
Because she behaved very, very, I think, very heartlessly to her father. I don't think she was fond of her father, much less fond than I was, so to speak.
Yes, yes. But you, and Gronwy would have told you this before the war.
Yes, it must have been, because, yes, it must have been before the war, but probably only just before. Because I wasn't seeing very much of Gronwy at that time. I saw him more a little bit after war started, because, you know, I was sorry for him in his extraordinary place where he was housed, as you might say, down by the docks and that. It was all very uncomfortable.
Yes.
And I remembered, and because the war in my...
The early 40s.
Yes, it was right at the beginning of the war, really. But where he was unhappiest was later on when he was sort of turning into an officer. Then he looked back on the docks and his friends in the docks with great affection compared with the people he met in Camberley or wherever it was he was being trained. But
this is interesting. So Gronwy is telling you possibly in late 39, early 40 that he's had these conversations with Burgess about being an agent, being a member of the party.
Mm.
He's telling you that Burgess has tried to recruit him.
Yes.
And that he, Gronwy, will not play.
Mm.
That's what you
That's
remember Gronwy is
yes,
telling
you. Yes, I do. And I still argue to this day with Isaiah. I don't think Gronwy ever joined the Communist Party, you see. I mean, I got several letters from him in which he said he would never do such a thing, that they were mistaken, as it were.
Because the competing narrative is to the effect that Garanwy does join 37 and gets out when the Hitler, when the Stalin-Ribbentrop Pact, or the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, is announced in 39. But that Garanwy, for very honorable reasons, takes one look at that and thinks, to hell with it. But that's not the version that you would subscribe to. That is, he was a member of the party, 37 to 39, then left.
No, I wouldn't have thought he was a member of the party, I don't think. But I wasn't very close to him at that time, I mean.
What about the others? What about people like Jennifer Hart and the others?
Well, I mean, one, I think I only learned about Jennifer sort of after the war, I mean, when it all came out, I think.
Yes.
And I don't know, I mean, could Herbert have known about that Jennifer was in that, those sort of circumstances when he married
her? Yes, he must have known.
He must have known, yes.
So that you were not at all surprised when Burgess flew the coup?
One of the things I do remember, which Izar absolutely denies, is that he invited us to a party that he was giving with, for his parents, when his parents were there. And it wasn't in sat next to him and talked to him a bit about Russia and all that. And
this is in the RAC Club after the war.
After the war, yes. It was just, it was literally, I mean, two or three days later, he, Burgess flew away, I mean, you know, went off.
Yeah.
Even the next day or something. But Izar, I think, denies that Burgess was at this party.
You're absolutely sure.
Well, yes, and Michael is absolutely sure, but I wouldn't like you too much to emphasize that to Izar, because Izar has always said he wasn't there. He didn't have anything to do with it. But, I mean, Michael, certainly, your father, wouldn't he? I mean, he wouldn't, he couldn't have invented it, because I think it was his only meeting with Burgess, you see. I don't think he'd ever met him before.
Can either you or your husband remember the substance of what Burgess said or talked about on that occasion at the RAC?
Have you ever heard that talking about this?
No.
I could ask, I'll ask Michael if you like when I get back.
If you would, it'd be helpful.
Yes.
Yes. It's a very tangled skein. I mean, what you discover when you look at Isaiah's correspondence is that that guy wrote him quite a lot in 30.
Did he?
I mean,
yes.
There are 15 letters.
I always hated Guy. He was one of the few people I really disliked.
Yes. Why?
Why was it? Well, he was awfully unattractive. I mean, he was unattractive to look at and to listen to and to smell and to everything else.
Yes.
And no, he wasn't my cup of tea at all. I didn't meet him all that often, but the very seldom ones moments when I did, because he was sort of posted by that time. I mean, Gronwy and I had split up when he got so close. In fact, it was one of the reasons. I mean, I once said to Gronwy, "I can't stand your friends," or something. Now, what was that? What I remember for a long time. What was it he said? Don't remember what it was.
But in fact, Gronwy's proximity to Guy was one of the
things that took me away from Gronwy. Yes, I'm sure. And of course, then you know, his love affairs, his affair with what was her name?
Rosamund Lehman,
yes.
Yes. Isaiah was at Bowen's court when all that takes off in September 36.
Yes. Yes, and then they all go and stay in by that time I was aboard, and I was staying with Isaiah, who he loved her, didn't he, the writer, what's her name?
Elizabeth Bowen.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. But you were abroad then?
Then I was abroad, yes. I wasn't really in touch with that lot at all then. I knew her in Oxford, actually, in the early 30s, but I didn't know her later on. I wasn't anything to do with it. I'd moved out of those circles, so to speak, by then.
Yes. I wanted to, I'm not doing this very systematically, but I did want to take you back to one thing that you were mentioning before, which is your visit to Ruthenia and the Subcarpathians.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering, that developed after Salzburg. That is, you went to Salzburg.
Yes,
together,
yes, we,
you
yes,
were at Salzburg.
We all met in Salzburg to begin with, and then it was Isaiah who suggested it, because he said that there was this miracle working Jew. I think was he a Jewish doctor or something in Subcarpathia, and he wanted to go and see his miracles. I think. Yeah.
All right. And so you all tagged along.
And so we all tagged along, yes. And we couldn't, when we got to Bratislava, you see, I think it was, Isaiah insisted on buying the tickets because he alone could speak these sort of Russian and all this sort of thing. And this extraordinary thing happened in which he when we started to come back with our return tickets, you find he bought six single tickets there. Yeah.
So that his linguistic competence was not all
not
he made it, made
a,
it out
not,
to be.
No. Well, I mean, I think a sort of Slovak or Czech, so to speak, is very, very different from Russian. I don't see why he should. I mean, I can quite see he could have made
yes.
a perfectly honourable mistake, so to speak.
Yes. So that this place was actually in present-day Slovakia?
No, it's in present-day Russia now.
It's in?
Because it was... Oh, well, where we finally went to, yes, Mukachevo, it was called.
Mukachevo.
I think it's in Russia.
Uh-huh.
It's in Russia now, and has been ever since the end of the war.
And what do you remember of Mukachevo?
I remember it distinctly, actually, because we traveled to all three of us together with this wonderful melon that we were carrying around in Isaiah's hat, wasn't it, I believe?
Yes.
Something like that. And... the further we got closer to Mukachevo, the more thankful I was for the Czech. We always had to go and sign in at the Czech sort of consulates all the way through. Not all, they wouldn't be consulates. I don't know what they were, but they were, I suppose, the Czechs were very much keeping, you know, they were the masters in Czechoslovakia, as it were. And I was so relieved by the sort of cleanliness of the these things, that I would have really have preferred to sort of spend the night there than where we did, the sort of hotels we did stay in.
Yes.
And I would really like them. Finally, at Mukachevo, places like that, I mean, I was really so, so frightened. I mean, I was awfully frightened of all the Jews with long ringlets, you know, down their backs. And then there were so many people who were you know, had any one leg or sort of withered arm or the injured people all around one. And I remember Isaiah saying, well, the only way to keep healthy was to eat yogurt, which I'd never met before in my life. That was when I first, that this was a sort of health thing. But, and then we went off, you see, Gronwien and I, and said, all right, well, you can, I said I couldn't stand it. Couldn't we go to this wonderful sort of resort that we'd read about in the book, you see?
Yes.
And so Gronwien and I went off to find this place, which was no place at all. I mean, it was simply a sort of frontier post.
Yes. And then you came back.
And then we came straight back again and picked Isaiah up in. And I think he hadn't found his Wunder Rabbi either.
Oh, really?
I think he didn't. He wasn't actually there, but he was rather disappointed. I mean, he was pleased to have talked to he was pleased to have talked to several people while we were there, I think, in Russian.
Do you know, can you remember who he talked to?
No, I can't remember any of them by name or who they would be. He ought to, does he remember?
No.
I don't know.
You put your finger on something that I hadn't realized about this visit, which is the extent to which it's Isaiah's visit to the Central European shtetl,
yes,
to the Jewish world.
Yes.
And
yes,
what was slightly horrifying about it was just how Jewish it was. I mean, people with long locks and kaftans.
Well, it was a mixture of how Jewish the Jews were, so to speak, and how sort of the other natives. I don't know that it was I think it was the sort of natives more that had all these sort of injured limbs, as it were, and looked ill and
yeah,
looked generally.
Were they coming there to be cured by the miracle doctor? Was that why they were
no,
there?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think there was any thing about that in. But curious enough, I do remember that we took we got as far as Uzhhorod or somewhere like that, and then we thought that we couldn't really go on. There was no train to go on, so we took a taxi. And all we three got into the taxi and asked him to drive off, but not a bit of it. The taxi was then filled with any number of other people who climbed into the taxi and sat on the roof. I mean, it was thoroughly pink. And then off we went to Mukachevo in this taxi. And I always remember the driver seeing the expression on my face, presumably, or on perhaps all our faces, of horror, saying, "Do you want to come back?"
You said three. Remind me, there's you, there's Isaiah, and
Gromit.
And Gromit.
And I would have really liked to have shared a room in these hotels, you see, with Gromit, but Isaiah wasn't having that at all. Now, I felt, you know, that I was much more vulnerable, so to speak, to somebody breaking into this,
yes,
these horrible things. That I needed a guide of some, a guard of some sort.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No, they had the they slept together, and I slept.
Yes.
He was
so then, Isaiah was a slightly priggish duenna figure, or abbe-like figure, guarding over your virtue.
Yes, I think so a bit. Yes.
What did Garanwe think of that?
He didn't seem to protest in any way. And I don't think I made a fuss, but I did say it would be all nice. And I remember actually sort of, you know, he said that, I remember Isaiah said it was perfectly all right because they were next door, you see. And I remember sort of talking to them through the keyhole in a rather pathetic way. Whether that was just Mukachevo, I mean, that was the most unsavory of all these places. But they got steadily worse as one went through Czechoslovakia. And then you see the other thing that happened on this thing was that he and Gronwy were always talking about philosophy together, and they were discussing great philosophic talks, which left me far behind. I really didn't understand what they were talking about.
How long did this visit go on, do you think, this whole trip?
Well, then because of these tickets, you see, we got stuck. We did get back out of Mukachevo, luckily, and we stopped in Uzhhorod, and all of us wrote back to our family saying, "Please send us some money, you see, in order to pay for the tickets to get on." So that it took a bit longer than we meant it to take, but it can't have been more than about 10 days or a fortnight or something like that, at most.
This is really the I have only two more questions. What time? Because you have to go and see
Alan. Oh, yes,
we're
seeing Alan. It's at 12 o'clock. Yes, we've got.
I'm just wondering what Salzburg was like in the 30s. It was such an important part of Isaiah's life through the 30s. I wanted to get a sense of the atmosphere of
it was beautiful, I think. And the atmosphere was that there were an enormous number of sort of Oxford people were there in those days. I mean, that one knew quite a lot of the sort of people around. And I remember it as... I remember the wonderful sort of lovely horses all around with sort of nose pouring out of their noses, pouring, sort of filling all the water, so to speak, all around. I mean, it was the most beautiful place. Oh, I loved it, yes.
You had a day that would, you'd spend all the evening at the various concerts,
yes,
Raoul, and then
yes,
during the day,
what did you do?
What
did we do? I think we just walked around Salzburg Valley because it was so, it seemed so beautiful to be there. And I suppose
Where did you stay?
We had meals. We stayed in a hotel. I don't know quite where. Did we stay in the same hotel? I can't quite remember, honestly.
Did Isaiah supervise the room arrangements in the hotels?
Oh yeah, well, slightly, yes, because I remember, I think again, on the contrary, Grammy and I were in a different hotel to me, and he came to Isaiah, and he came to visit us, and there I was very shocked to find that Grammy and I had a room together too.
You didn't approve?
Not at all, no.
But happily there was nothing you could do about it then.
No. I don't think he minded. He just said, you know, tap tap rather than anything else. He didn't try and sort of say this shouldn't happen. But I suppose this must have been sort of when we went to the time we went on to Subcarpathian Ruthenia, so that he, you know, he was jolly well going to see that was respectable.
Yes. Did you have a sense of a gathering Nazi presence in Salzburg, or is that
not
too early?
Not yet. No, we didn't at all.
But Isaiah does not go back through Germany.
He didn't come back through Germany, but this must have been after when we also went and met this woman that Stephen Spender was very close to. Mark, and we talked about her even last night, Margaret Kennedy, was she called Kennedy? What were we saying about this? But I don't think Isaiah was around in, that was all in Vienna.
Yes.
I don't think it was, no, Isaiah wasn't there, but that musician we talked about, whom I liked, we both liked so much,
mm-hmm,
he was there.
Martin Cooper.
Yes.
I'm just wondering, as we're coming to the end, whether you feel slightly abandoned by Isaiah in the years after the war, kind of, you've had much less contact with him than you would have liked, and had a sense that he's changed and
no,
got
I don't
grand
think,
and distant. And
no, I don't think I really felt like that, because I was perfectly satisfied with my own life, so to speak, which I knew was totally different from Isaiah's life. I don't think I ever felt any resentment. I mean, I may have made the sort of first move, so to speak, to write to him rather than him to write to me, but not with any feeling that he jolly well ought to have done something different. No, I don't think I felt resentment. I mean, I knew that he wouldn't approve of the life that I was living, really.
Why not?
Well, you know, it was in the country and farming and things like that. Very, very, something very different from Isaiah. Anything that Isaiah would ever have dreamt of having that sort of life.
Do you think he's changed a tremendous amount since you knew him as a young man?
No, I don't think he has changed all that, funnily enough. I mean, I don't think we get on as well as we did, so to speak, when young. But this was partly sort of arguing again about Grammy. I mean, he was always sort of, you know, we were always arguing about whether Grammy was or wasn't a communist, which I've always been trying to defend him from this, because I've got several letters. I've got about sort of 200 letters from Grammy, for instance, as well as all the... I've kept all my letters from everybody, you see. Isaiah's not the only ones.
Good for you. On behalf of the Trade Union of Biographers, we wish to salute you, madam.
But there's all the difficulty about it, because family, so to speak. They don't like, I have offered them to the Bodleian, you see.
Yes.
And but on the other hand, one would like to know. I mean, they say that one can say, "Oh, well, nobody must publish anything for, you know, 30 years or something." But I don't know quite what to do about it.
What's the problem? The problem is, you don't want their contents disclosed.
Well, there are some sort of bits that might be harmful.
To whom? To you? To them?
No, I think it's my husband. For instance, I was asked just recently to do a more of the parting of ways. I mean, bring the parting of ways up to the end of the war. And this was an Irish publisher. And now he's rather changed to it being that what he would really like to do with, together with a man whom I wonder if you know him, what's he called? Tonkin? Who's a publisher at, as you know, darling,
he's in Random House.
What?
He's in Random House.
Random House publisher. Yeah. He's one of the Random House publishers, anyhow. I'm meeting him. I haven't met him yet.
Yes.
But he's a great friend of this Lilliput Irish publisher that I'm in touch with. And now they want me to do an autobiography. But my husband says if I really write the truth about my autobiography, all my children will turn against me.
Yeah,
it's he who will turn against you.
And he will. I'll divorce you, he said.
Yeah.
That's the notion.
But I don't think I'm ashamed of my life, really, in any way. Well, it isn't. I mean, you know, compared with sort of Isaiah's life, I mean, look at it. He's all he knows and reads and has written and seen and all the, you know, all the wonderful concerts and theatres and operas and things he's gone to and all the Americans. I've never even crossed the Atlantic. My life is very, very, very narrow, I think.
Well, you lived it vividly. You remember it well, too. So good for you.
Well, I've enjoyed it. I mean, you know, it's been a pleasure rather than a pain, so to speak, most of the time. I'm very fond of people. I like people, really. Much more than my husband doesn't like. Your father doesn't like people a bit, does he? Unfortunately. Even Isaiah, and I don't think Isaiah approves of him either.
Really? I see no documentary evidence.
No, there's no documentary evidence. But I think he thinks, why on earth, so to speak, did you marry and sort of give up all the life you might have had?
Yes. Do you ask yourself that question?
Well, it's sort of a difficult one to answer in front of my daughter, especially.
She does constantly.
I do see I could have had a more exciting life. I mean, it started more excitingly than it is ending, so to speak. Except that suddenly this extraordinary sort of thing that, you know, one thought one's life was finished, and suddenly sort of, you know, Robert Key, whom I don't even know and never knew and hadn't read any of his books, sort of rings up and says, will you come? That's sort of vaguely makes one feel perhaps one's had a life.
Yeah. And then there are the circling vultures like me.
And then there's you, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Thank you very much.
Well, it's nice to have met you, and I'm sorry about all the sort of contretemps. They were quite unnecessary.